guitarist Kenny Burrell from his new album Groovin' High. That was If I Love Again, with Ben Riley on drums and Larry Ridley on bass. And with me is jazz guitarist Kenny Burrell, who's been considered one of the premier guitarists since the 1950s. Burrell grew up in Detroit and made his recording debut with Dizzy Gillespie's band in 1951. He left Detroit in the mid-50s to join the Oscar Peterson Trio, replacing Herb Ellis. 56, he moved to New York and recorded his first session as a leader for Blue Note Records. He won his first Downbeat Award in 1957. Burrell had the reputation of being Duke Ellington's favorite guitarist, but they never had the chance to record together. Kenny Burrell has recorded dozens of albums. His latest Groovin' High is on Muse Records. He's in Philadelphia today for the Philadelphia International Jazz Arts Conference, a two-day symposium of talks and performance workshops sponsored by WRTI, Temple University's radio station, which specializes in jazz programming. Burrell opened the conference today with a talk on the significance of Duke Ellington and his music. The conference is being held at the Temple University campus in the Tomlinson Theater. For more information, you can call 787-8405. That's 787-8405. And there is a registration fee, so you might want to call for more information. Kenny Burrell, welcome to Fresh Air.
Thank you, Susan. Nice to be with you.
It's Terry.
Terry,
yeah,
sorry.
That's okay.
They gave me the wrong information outside.
That's fine. When you were developing your style, I think guitar was still developing itself as a solo voice in jazz. It hadn't been that long since there was electric guitar and since it could play solo lines and actually be heard. Who were the influences on you when you were starting to play?
Well, there were several guitar influences, but there were many others also. I say that so that you understand that it was not just my instrument that helped me to get ideas and formulate ideas. Certainly, the founding father of the electric guitar in terms of soloing would be Charlie Christian, who influenced myself and many others. Two others of my favorites who also were influences. One was Oscar Moore, who played guitar with the Nat King Cole Trio, whom I thought and still think was very great and very important in terms, especially in terms of his chordal work and accompaniment. Certainly backed up Nat Cole beautifully. That got to me in a very strong way. And also the individuality of the late Django Reinhardt. I thought he had just a beautiful individual approach, so unique in the sense that the person really came through. I was inspired not so much to sound like him, but the idea that one can get such a personal sound out of the instrument. Then there was the host of blues guitarists that were certainly part of my background. Like John Lee Hooker and Muddy Waters, T-Bone Walker, and people like that who are legendary in the blues idiom, which were there as I grew up also. Many others, but I think that's basically covers it in terms of the guitar. But if we're talking about now influences, we're thinking in terms of the 40s and 50s. There was the great Charlie Parker, and Dizzy Gillespie and many others, Thelonious Monk, Fats Navarro, Miles Davis, Art Tatum, Lester Young, Coleman Hawkins, all those people who were active then certainly had an influence on myself. So it goes, somewhat beyond the instrument, the guitar.
Was there a music scene that you felt part of when you were learning how to play?
Oh, there were many. There was, at a very early age, there was a sort of a group of guitarists that got together. My oldest brother, Billy, played the guitar, and he would get together with fellow guitarists and have little sessions, jam sessions. I was kind of on the peripheral of that, and once in a while I would sit in. Then as I grew up into my teens, by the way, I started when I was like 12, and then when I got into mid-teens, I would go to jam sessions with my peers, and those people were people like Tommy Flanagan, Elvin Jones, the brother of Milt Jackson, Alvin, who you may not have heard of, but he was a bassist who was working with us and jamming. Rather than going to a whole list of people, I'm sure you can tell the people from Detroit that came up in the 50s. Well, that was the sort of the formative time, and then in the late 50s, there was a whole bunch of folks that came out of Detroit, in which we all had sort of a great workshop together in our preparation to crash the big time.
Was it hard to distinguish your own voice from your two brothers when you were young and living in the same house together? Since you all played guitar.
Right, but see, the part of the tradition, if I may say, the jazz tradition or the Afro-American aesthetic, is that you should find your own voice. You shouldn't sound like others. You certainly can have influences and quote other people in your solos and so forth, and it's always a compliment to them, but the ideal goal is to find your own voice. Certainly in the beginning that's hard, but it's something that's sort of a part of the process that you just assume that you're going to do. And so in that sense it wasn't hard, because I was looking for it all the time anyway. But as you're young, you know, who am I?
You've been known as the guitarist who was Duke Ellington's favorite guitarist. How come you never had that chance to play or record together?
Well, actually, Ellington didn't use the guitar after the 40s. He, for whatever reason, never saw fit to use the guitar, except on a couple of occasions when the great Django Reinhardt came to visit the United States. He did a concert tour with Ellington. So that was basically the reason. It didn't fit into what he had in mind. But I was highly complimented by, you know, his saying that on more than one occasion, as I have been. I feel very blessed about his compliment, and other musicians like him, you know, Count Basie, et cetera, that I really never played with, but felt that I was, you know, a very important and a strong player. I got to know Ellington, as you probably know, and not only fell in love with his music, but also in terms of what the man represented as an artist, his strength and creativity. But I'm not alone in this. As you know, there are many musicians influenced very strongly by Ellington. But he is a great master of American music, of jazz music, American music, world music, and many lessons there to be learned by all of us in terms of just being creative. So my natural instincts and leanings made me delve deeper and deeper into Ellington, the study of Ellington, Ellingtonia.
We've recorded two double albums of Ellington songs. Let's hear a selection from one of them. We're going to hear a recording of Solitude with Jimmy Smith at the organ. Do you want to say something about these collections of Ellington?
Well, briefly, I'll just say that, first of all, working with Jimmy Smith is always a joy. We seem to have something that clicks, and we hardly have to have it work anything out in rehearsal or anything. And making the albums, Ellington is Forever, Volumes 1 and 2, was a labor of love. And as you can see, I had a great cast of musicians who just came and did it because we were dedicating this album to the memory of Ellington. We did these in 75 and 76. Ellington died in 74.
Okay, so from one of the two compilations of Ellington songs, this is Kenny Burrell on guitar with Jimmy Smith at the organ, Duke Ellington's Solitude. Jazz guitarist Kenny Burrell with two Jimmy Smiths, one on drums, one on organ. My guest is guitarist Kenny Burrell. You worked with arranger Gil Evans, and perhaps one of your best known albums, Guitar Forms, is arranged by him. Have you enjoyed playing in a setting of arrangements as opposed to, you know, a looser improvisational setting?
Depends on the people involved.
I enjoy both. I just think that any combination of instruments depends on the people that you have, the caliber of the musician, the sensitivity. I think you can make it work. Almost any combination can work if the right people are involved.
We're going to hear a selection from that album. We're going to hear Greensleeves. Can you tell us how this collaboration was established?
Well, Verve at the time and producer Cree Taylor wanted to, I had done a lot of work for them in their early 60s and a variety of contexts, you know, some of the bossa nova stuff I did with Stan Getz and Astrid Gilberto and some stuff with Jimmy Smith and a variety, Kay Winding, Herbie Hancock, Donald Byrd. And he felt that because of that, it would be nice for me to do an album, my own album, which would showcase me in a variety of settings. So I thought it was a good idea, and so we proceeded. And he asked me who I would want to work with on this, and I naturally, fortunately, could pick the arranger, so I asked for Gil Evans, and we got him. And that's how that came about. And it was wonderful to work with Gil. He's a master.
We're going to hear Greensleeves. Do you want to say a few words about this piece?
Well, we all know Greensleeves. It's a folk song from wherever. It's been around for many, many years. And I happen to like it, and I also like it in the sense that it's something I like to explore harmonically in terms of soloing on it. So I thought it would be a good vehicle to show two things. Number one, how the difference of the acoustic and the electric guitar, the transition from one to the other, how one can expand in a jazz way a theme that's basically a folk theme. And so that's what happened. And then Gil certainly made some great background.
Okay, from the album Guitar Forms, arranged by Gil Evans, this is jazz guitarist Kenny Burrell, and we'll hear Greensleeves. Guitarist Kenny Burrell from the album Guitar Forms, arranged by Gil Evans, that was Greensleeves. It's a terrific record. Do you have your own records? Do you ever listen back to them?
Sometimes, yeah. I have this one. Somehow my records get scattered around friends and et cetera, relatives. But I have this. I don't listen a lot, but once in a while I pull them out, you know.
In some respects, I think the guitar has been the most commercially successful of jazz solo instruments. And I'm thinking, you know, like George Benson, when he decided to really get, produced up, was quite a success. Wes Montgomery had some very, very successful records. Mm-hmm. Were there ever any truly commercial schemes that you decided not to go with and to just play the music you'd been playing instead?
No, not really. I think that I have never been approached to do anything other than that I felt would be not right, and perhaps that's because maybe people would know I would refuse anyway. But no, it's a simple no to that answer.
Do you think that rock guitarists have affected jazz guitarists or vice versa?
Well, I don't know. I guess so. To what extent, I can't say. Certainly there's always influences coming back and forth. There's certainly an appreciation from rock guitarists towards jazz guitarists because of the enormous depth that's involved in jazz, you know. To what extent, I can't say, you know. I mean, there's people around, you know, like Andy Summers and the various rock groups that say publicly that they like jazz guitarists. But to what extent that this influence, that there is an influence, I can't say. I haven't gone into that and probably never will. But I think we're all influencing each other to some extent at all times. And
you must hear a lot of young guitarists who have memorized solos of yours and have listened
to all
your records.
Up. That's all. That's part of getting it together. And that's nothing unusual.
Are you flattered when you notice that?
Yeah, I am, in the sense that it seems that they look at me as in a way as a role model for getting into music or into jazz music, and so I'm certainly flattered in a way by that. Like I said earlier, the key is to find your own voice eventually. Anyway.
Right. Listen, I want to thank you very much for talking with us a little bit about your music
okay,
and your
Terry.
Playing. And I want to play another selection from your latest album, which is called Groovin' High.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to hear Spring Can Really Hang You Up the Most, which has always been one of my favorite
songs.
You
like that one.
Yeah, I wonder why you chose it to record.
Well, I do it as a solo piece, and I don't know if you're aware of it, but it's sort of a subtle thing that I've done over the years. I try to many times include at least one solo guitar piece on an album, and this is the one I chose because I had been playing it for a number of years. In fact, I guess I was probably the first guitarist to play this piece because I did the show with the composer, Tommy Wolfe. It only lasted a couple of days, but at least I remember seeing it for the first time 20-some-odd years ago, and I liked it. So that and a couple of others on here, I finally got around to recording. I think Lament is on there, J.J. Johnson's Groovin' High, and pieces that I just kind of, I have a few more stacked away that I want to get to one day when the recording comes around.
Well, I want to remind our listeners that Kenny Burrell's in Philadelphia to attend a jazz conference that's being held at Temple University. He already spoke. He spoke this morning. Will you be holding any other workshops there?
Well, I'm going to attend a guitar workshop in about, what time is it now, 4? As soon as we get back over there. But I think it's already in progress. I'm just going to kind of observe and sort of give a critique and talk to some of the students.
Okay, well, the conference is at Temple University's Tomlinson Theater. And for more information, you can call 787-8405. That's 787-8405. It's the Philadelphia International Jazz Arts Conference. It continues through tomorrow. Well, from the new Kenny Burrell album, Groovin' High, this is him featured on solo guitar. Spring Can Really Hang You Up the Most. Kenny Burrell playing Spring Can Really Hang You Up the Most. Kenny Burrell is speaking at that jazz conference I just mentioned, as is composer and arranger George Russell, who we'll be meeting in a moment. Before we meet him, let's listen to a selection.